Hi, welcome to the Comics Bulletin Podcast.
A podcast for Jean Jones, the manhunter from Mars, his world, and the vile menagerie of villains he must confront.
At the website Comics Bulletin, there was an article published on October 8th, 2014, called Alex Ross Talks About the Martian Manhunter on the Cusp of John Jones' 60th Anniversary. I thought cusp was kind of a curious word to use, given that that was roughly 11 months before Martian Manhunter's 60th Anniversary. I discovered the article over a year ago, which would have put it ahead of the actual 60th Anniversary, but I never could work out what exactly to do with this article. It's a pretty long-form piece. So then I thought about, I believe it was the What the F podcast with Mark Maron. Some guy had gone in and edited himself into the show to make it appear as though he was a co-host on the show and was simply being ignored by the host and the guest. So I thought, well, what about if I inserted myself into this conversation that I wasn't actually a part of, except that this is a text conversation, not a podcast, so I'll have to take that extra step of adapting a text article to audio. To make this as easy as possible for me, I wanted to choose a text to audio program on the internet that could take the most text and spit out audio as quickly as possible. And in my quick search, I came up with acapellabox.com. The part of Alex Ross will be portrayed by the voice Rod.
Hello, I am not Alex Ross, but I will be playing him on this podcast program.
The author of the article and the person with whom Alex Ross has this conversation is Brian Stroud.
Brian Stroud is not a woman, I don't think, but the voice of Karen will help to break up this sausage factory and differentiate the voices.
Now, this audio thing that I'm Frankensteining together is no substitute for reading the actual article, which will be linked in the show notes. I greatly appreciate that both Brian and Alex Ross took the time to have such a deep, in-depth discussion of this character. It's very uncommon. Trust me, as someone who knows, you don't see that happen for John Jones very often. So you have to go read the article. I'm going to take as little from the article as possible in order to interject my own thoughts into the conversation. I will note, though, that the impetus of the creation of the article is that Brian was interviewing Ross about his 2003 tabloid project, JLA, Liberty and Justice.
Some factions believe that the debut of the Martian Manhunter was actually the first new hero of the Silver Age, while others maintain it's the Flash in Showcase number 4, October 1956. Then again, is the first character of the Silver Age a superhero or a science fiction figure?
He would be both. Realistically, he's a character that distinctly belongs to the Silver Age, and he's definitely a superhero, even if his costume looks like a leftover remnant of the sci-fi slash pulp construct costume. I know when you first read those original stories, it doesn't really read like a superhero story. It reads more like science fiction, but there's definitely the superhero aesthetic.
As I believe I've noted elsewhere, I disagree with that assertion. I think that if you claim that John Jones is the first hero of the Silver Age, then you might as well reach back to Captain Comet. Since they had a good deal in common, Captain Comet was definitely immersed in the superhero aesthetic while also marrying it very clearly to science fiction, or at least science fantasy. History is written by the victors. The Flash was the superhero character that revived that genre and was a major success. Martian Manhunter was a backup feature in Batman during one of the least successful periods of his publishing history. I would argue that John Jones is a product of the Atomic Age, which is one of many names that have been assigned to this gap between the end of the Golden Age and the start of the Silver Age. There are actually a whole slew of these guys, and one of the ways that I think you could define them is by their genre bending. The Phantom Stranger is a horror character. He appears in a bunch of Justice League stories. Turok, he was one of the biggest hits of the Valiant Comics revival of the early 90s. Got a start at Gold Key in 1954, but how do you classify him? He's a Native American from the 1800s. He's fighting dinosaurs in prehistoric times. Then he's in the modern era. Marvel Man got started in 1954. Sure, he's basically a continuation of Captain Marvel, and he was published in the UK, but he's not a Golden Age hero. He's not really a Silver Age hero. The Silver Age doesn't start with him. Fighting American, something of a parody of Captain America, came out in 1954. Heck, even Batwoman, the Kathy Kane version, predates The Flash, so it gets a bit nebulous. I think most people agree that the Barry Allen Flash started the Silver Age, and I like that John Jones comes from this period that isn't the Golden Age, isn't the Silver Age. He's a guy I think works well with ambiguity, and so I like that he is originated from ambiguity itself.
In a way, I have a special connection to him because it was a unique thing in my own collaboration. I kept him him largely out of Kingdom Come, because initially the story needed to come down to this final showdown between Superman and Captain Marvel. Those two counterpoints, if you add in more power on the Superman side of the equation, in the form of the Martian Manhunter, in that final conflict, it's not really going to work. So Mark Waid and I had sort of a disagreement about it initially, and I had to sort of talk him into it that he was being used by Batman and his team, but not in the sense of what you thought of for him. He could still read minds and provide intel to Batman, but he wasn't really up to being the superhero he'd been all this time. He'd been more affected by his time with humankind. That was a diversion from Mark's ambition for the character to use him more ambitiously as part of a true unification of a classic Justice League hanging out with Superman in the Kingdom Come series. My thought was that if you add him with Superman, it's almost like you've got two heads of the team, and I always saw him as much more associated with Batman, especially because of the length of his tenure with the group. All of this sort of prompted me for when I got around to doing the one shot for Justice League, and that I'd make it all from his point of view as the preeminent sort of narrator slash character for the story, because I had skipped using him. He's a character I've loved, but I just didn't want to throw off Kingdom Come for all that it had been conceived to be. Plus, what Mark didn't appreciate or maybe see the same way as I was, that in many ways Kingdom Come was itself an analog of the entire DC history rather than an approximation of the DC Silver Age that he was most fond of, because when Superman defines his sort of Justice League kind of team, it truly was a snapshot of the Justice Society, as per the comics of the 70s and 80s, where you've got Power Girl in there, and the version of the Flash and Green Lantern are clearly much more the originals than the Silver Age versions. So throwing in Martian Manhunter is not really what I'm doing here. It's not what I wanted to do. Many people have called out Kingdom Come as being a tribute to the old Earth 2 Superman up against older versions of DC characters. In many cases, that was the thing I was trying to pay tribute to. I didn't really have a visual in mind, particularly as a shapeshifter. He wouldn't be older, so you wanted to have some sort of visual. His was more of an intellectual, and had been damaged by his experiences. Sort of like David Bowie in The Man Who Fell to Earth. He's still connected to his inherently alien roots, and it left him as a compromised figure.
Yeah, my understanding is that Alex Ross and Mark Waid actually had screaming matches over how to use Martian Manhunter in Kingdom Come, and that Kurt Busiek was the one who actually came up with the idea of breaking John Jones and taking him off the board to a large degree. I tend to agree with Ross that Martian Manhunter would gravitate toward Batman, not only because they were both in Detective Comics, but because their thinking process, their approach to heroics are much closer. Batman is a super detective. John Jones is something of a super cop. So that's much more in sync than the more optimistic worldviews of Superman and Wonder Woman. It's also one of the reasons why I loathe Mark Waid and I assume Alex Ross's interpretation of the Wonder Woman character in Kingdom Come. I blame it directly for a lot of the terrible, terrible things that have been done with that character since. I think it was an awful inspiration to people who took off from that. But then again, Kingdom Come has unintentionally, as with Watchmen, inspired works that are in direct opposition to the clear intent of the creators in producing those works. Both Kingdom Come and Watchmen are examples of a dire circumstance that realistic superheroes could be led towards, and why you have to pull back from realism to present icons that instill hope and can provide heroic examples to people. You can only have your heroes have so much feet of clay before they themselves become contributing factors to a decline in people's aspirations for their own potential positive effect on the world. Obviously, there is a cynicism inherent in the character of John Jones, or at least a greater trepidation, a greater acknowledgement of the demons in the minds of people, since John recognizes immediately upon arriving on Earth that he's in danger from mankind, and also a danger to them. I listened to a podcast recently where one of the speakers noted something that I don't think it ever occurred to me, that the first human being that John Jones interacts with on the planet Earth dies in front of him, likely as a direct result of the shock of seeing a Martian appear before him. And so, of course, that would make John Jones careful about how he presents himself to humanity, just at the basic level of he doesn't want to kill us at the sight of him. But another major issue I had with Kingdom Come was that so much of the story revolved around Batman and Superman being at odds with one another. If you look at their history, it's really a situation more of opposites attracting. They do represent light and dark, hope and anger, and all sorts of different polemics, but they also recognize and value what each member of the team contributes and the perspective that one lends to the other. So it doesn't really make sense for me for Superman and Batman to be at war with each other any more than it makes sense for me for Superman to be the paragon of the hopeful side and for Wonder Woman to be the person who is pragmatic and angry and violent. That's something that also troubled me about New Frontier and Darwin Cook's understanding of the character there. That's not who the character of Wonder Woman is. So you're already starting off the story with a false premise that Superman is the person who would be on the extreme side, perhaps even to the point of naivete. That's much more Wonder Woman's realm. She's the person who not only refuses things like capital punishment, but actually goes out of her way to try to redeem her foes, to always see the good in everyone, even her most dire adversaries. John Jones is nowhere near that optimistic. He is much more suspicious. He's much more practical. So he definitely veers much closer to Batman's side of things. He also has a tendency towards being a mentor to younger heroes and to work with the outcasts, the rejects, the screw-ups. Look no further than the Detroit Area Justice League, toward Justice League International, Justice League Task Force, arguably Stormwatch and Justice League United. And see, that's another issue, is that Wonder Woman, to some extent, works as someone who works with Superman on a future team. I personally think that she should be in the leadership role as opposed to someone who's essentially nagging Superman toward her ultimate goal, as she does in Kingdom Come. It makes much more sense to see a conflict between Wonder Woman and Batman for me, but she's still somebody who's clearly part of the JLA pantheon, whether you look at that as being defined by the founding members of the team that Gardner Fox and Mike Sikowski created in the 60s, or the Grant Morrison conception of the Magnificent Seven in the late 90s. And as much as I love Martian Manhunter being included in that group, at the same time, you'll notice he very rarely is a part of that group. And I've heard the argument a lot recently as I've been listening to other podcasts and doing reading on the character. People having an issue with John Jones being on the same team as Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, where it's just too powerful. I have issues with that because I just think that shows a lack of imagination on the part of the creators and sometimes of the fans, because if you can have a team with Superman and Green Lantern and Wonder Woman on it, then why is Martian Manhunter the bridge too far? But the fact is, the character himself is not popular enough to warrant the time, the screen time it would take to develop him so that he could stand in any way as an equal to these much more popular properties. And because of his enormous power levels, he tends to be the guy that gets taken out because he's the one guy you can take out without a fan base screaming for blood. So to my mind, the Manhunter not only works better on alternative teams, but if you look at his history, he usually is part of these alternative teams. Despite the myth of John Jones being in every incarnation of the Justice League that was perpetuated in the 80s and early 90s, he's had long gaps away, and in fact, he tends to disappear when the bigger icons are around. Martian Manhunter, more than Superman or Batman, can claim founder status of the Justice League. He was in the team first. He was on the team more often in the early days. He was the one who was featured on the covers. And as Batman and Superman were used more often and more prominently in the Justice League, as well as other heroes that Julie Schwartz was trying to push as soloists and as members of the team, John Jones got pushed out fairly early on. Within the first 3 years or so, you didn't see Manhunter much. And then once he was gone for a very long time. Aside from occasional visits, he was gone until 1984. And what team did he join then? The Detroit Area Justice League. No Superman, no Batman, no Wonder Woman, no Flash, no Green Lantern. And they didn't even have Aquaman for all that long. Then he's on the Justice League International, where he briefly works with Batman, who then cedes leadership to him while becoming a reservist. Dr. Fate briefly on the team, Captain Marvel briefly on the team. Both are gone within the first 6 issues of the book. So in terms of raw powerhouses, the only competition John Jones had was from Green Lantern, but this particular incarnation was Guy Gardner, someone who definitely needed a firm hand from somebody powerful enough for that hand to have weight behind it, being John Jones. So I agree that you kind of have to take Manhunter off the board in a book like Kingdom Come, because if you don't, you end up with a third faction you've got to deal with, because there's really no guarantee he's going to be working with either Superman or Batman. And in the case of having him serve as Batman's muscle, then the fight becomes between Manhunter and Superman, or Manhunter and Wonder Woman. And in that case, really, John Jones is punching out of his class. Kingdom Come was a very important book for Captain Marvel. It reminded people that there was a day when Shazam had more dollar value behind him than Superman. Superman basically had to resort to dirty pull to push Captain Marvel aside, and then proceeded to hire all of his old creative teams to make Superman as much like the Marvel family as possible. You absolutely don't have Supergirl or Superboy without Mary Marvel and Captain Marvel Jr. You arguably don't have Lex Luthor or Jimmy Olsen without Dr. Zavanna or Mr. Talkie-Tawny. Captain Marvel was a contender in a way that Martian Manhunter has never been, and I would say that Alex Ross has a passion for that character that he isn't likely to have for Martian Manhunter. And simply put, it's just much more iconic and much more powerful to see Captain Marvel fight Superman, for that to be the title bout at the end of Kingdom Come. So you have Martian Manhunter more prominent role, you're telling a completely different story. As a Wonder Woman fan, I wouldn't mind that. As a Martian Manhunter fan, I may not mind that. But the residuals those guys are still getting from that book, they probably chose correctly.
Can you describe the differences between Superman and John? The fact fact that one looks more human? Did that cause one to take off and the other to be somewhat sidelined?
One thing about John Jones is that he doesn't have the iconography of a symbol that everyone can grab onto. He doesn't have a complicated, romantic subplot in his background. His time in Detective didn't involve any real romance. So these human connections that we make and the iconographic connections are missing. Maybe if he had some sort of stylized M on his belt or something, but because he's a mostly nude figure running around, it sort of throws off what people used to identify him with. He's absolutely essential to the group dynamic of the JLA, perhaps more so than Superman and Batman, because he was in the first adventure while they were not. It began with 5 characters rather than 7. Intellectually, he kind of inherited the role of the Spectre from the old JSA when they revitalized the whole Justice League concept. I always, for some reason, even as a kid, held this connection to the character. There are a handful of characters that have this kind of look, so I had a passion for them. So you've got Martian Manhunter, you've got the Vision, you've got the Red Tornado. They're all this certain type as a sort of detached bald guy. I don't know why.
Curiously, I'll offer a counter-argument. I don't think that John Jones is essential to the group dynamic of the JLA. I think that's been demonstrated by the fact that he spent so much time away from the group. He'll always be a founder. He'll always have that status. But I think he's a more interesting character when you have a conflict with that status, that he was a founding member. He's not anymore. He's doing something else now that is potentially at odds with the Justice League. David Lee Roth will always have a connection to Van Halen, and some would argue that it's a better group with Roth in it. But the narrative of Van Halen versus David Lee Roth is more interesting than, I don't know, is the original lineup of Scorpion still intact? I don't believe that John Jones would ever be a traitor to the Justice League, but I think you get more interesting stories if he is a founder and former friend at odds with the team, or even if he's just off on a side version of the team, which is often the case, kind of doing his own thing. He can be the Peter Gabriel to Genesis, or the John Frusciante to the Red Hot Chili Peppers. But I think what we saw in the Bronze Age, and to some degree what we saw during the extended run of JLA after Morrison left, is that the Manhunter is a more interesting member of the Justice League when he's not a member, when he's the guy who's gone away and comes back for special occasions. Because there are too many people that insist on the DC Trinity being on the team, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman. And I'm not going to argue that they're wrong. It's just a lot harder to write everybody else when you've got those three sucking all the air out of the room. And the Martian Manhunter's got the smallest oxygen tank. But that's another thing. I love his status as a founding member because it always affords him a notoriety and a potential for visibility that other also-rans, say Phantom Stranger, Captain Comet, who were from that same time period, don't have. He'll always be a founding member of the Justice League, even if they stick Cyborg into some version of the book. Just as Wonder Woman was always going to be a founding member of the Justice League, even if you decide that she and Superman and Batman had never been members and Black Canary is her replacement. Because we all know the truth, and we all know that that Trinity is so important to the DC Universe as a whole, that even if they weren't true founders, which in the case of Batman and Superman, arguably they were not, the collective has decided that they need to be founders, because you don't have the greatest super team in comics without Superman and Batman being part of it. But that having been said, being an icon is also potentially a great trap. I've been reading comics too long to accept Superman in a romantic relationship with anybody but Lois Lane. At this point, despite decades of attempts to make it otherwise, and despite my own wishes at times for it to be otherwise, ultimately Wonder Woman is supposed to be with Steve Trevor. One of the things that makes Batman an easier character to write and potentially a more dynamic character is that he does not have that significant other, and he's a character that does work in various romantic relationship, various entanglements, in a way that Superman and Wonder Woman don't. Those kind of stories are taken off the table for creators. And I don't think that's too bad, because I think that other stories replace those. I love stories where Clark Kent and Lois Lane are a couple, and they're working together in their different areas of expertise and ability to affect change. I love what Steve Trevor, allowing himself to be rescued by Wonder Woman, says about him and says about the relationships between men and women. Just because you can't tell soap opera stories about the romantic entanglements does not mean that those characters are lesser. In fact, in many ways, they're greater. Because by taking those stories off the table, which for me are distractions, I don't care about them having soap opera stories. You can tell real stories. You can tell the stories of Superman and Lois Lane's marriage, their love for each other, what they accomplish as a team. I would also argue that romance is a liability for Batman. It's an area of the character stories that I find much less interesting, because they're always going to be doomed. Batman is never going to be happy. He's never going to have a child that lives without, you know, a Lazarus pit being involved. His significant other is always going to be murdered, or they're going to turn evil, or something's going to happen, because a happy Batman is not a Batman that people are willing to accept, at least in the modern age. There were times when they may have. There were times where those type of stories could be told, and you could believe that that would be the ultimate fate of Batman, but it's been decades since that was true. So whenever Batman's in a relationship, all I start thinking is that poor woman. What horrible thing is going to happen to this poor lady? And so in that respect, Batman is actually a much more limited character because you can only take him so far, even as an adult, because he can't have adult relationships with romantic partners because you know it's always going to end terribly. What makes Martian Manhunter more viable in that respect, to my mind, is that because he doesn't have firmly established romantic partners and didn't for decades, you can tell stories about him being in romantic relationships that could go somewhere. Yes, Jean lost his wife, and yes, Jean spent decades as a avowed widower, somebody who was never going to cheat on her memory, somebody who was essentially going to be chaste. But sometime in the late 90s, they started to get away from that, and he started having relationships with various women. Some, like, say, Scorch, to my mind, didn't have much credibility. They also looked pretty well doomed from the outset. But he's also had some romantic partners that I think were very interesting, that were viable characters that could exist either as his romantic interests or outside of him, like Princess Carissa of Saturn, like Keshawna Lewis. And I also really enjoyed that Manhunter shared stories for a number of years with a policewoman named Diane Mead, with whom there really was no romance involved. He was just working with her as an equal. It's refreshing to see a man and a woman working together without that being an aspect that you have to address. In that respect, the Manhunter stories were much more mature than your average superhero stories, because in that same time period, you have Wonder Woman jumping through all kinds of hoops trying to win the love of Steve Trevor and all this other sort of nonsense that didn't reflect reality then, certainly doesn't now, or fairly embarrassing in retrospect. So by not having that official assigned canon love interest, you can go places with Jean that are forbidden to Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman. To some degree, even Green Lantern, Aquaman, The Flash, because all of them have strong, viable love interests as well that are difficult to get away from. And I'm not arguing that they should be gotten away from. But Martian Manhunter is an iconic character that offers a blank slate. Now, as far as a lack of appeal in his overall look, the classic Silver Age look that he carried through into recent times, I have affection for it. But even when I was getting into the character in the late 90s, I recognized that it was a bit of a weakness because of the non-big name solo character put up on the pedestal with the other six members of the Magnificent Seven JLA, there was always some sucker coming around trying to bring him down. And he looked kind of silly by modern standards. You could argue that he was a classic, but the Manhunter was never all that successful as a character in terms of sales, in terms of reader response. And again, unlike the classic heroes, you can alter him fairly radically visually and still have it be accepted by the public, whether in mass media, as he has been portrayed very differently across animated incarnations. He definitely doesn't look like the classic Martian Manhunter on the Supergirl TV show, and he didn't look at Smallville either, which was working with a much lower budget, mostly involved a dude in a nice suit representing for his entire power set and history. And it worked, because as long as the core character came correct, you accepted Phil Morse was the Martian Manhunter if all he had was a purple jacket and a red bandolier. I don't think he necessarily needs an icon the way that Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman have, but I'm sure that the people who market this character in merchandising, in comics themselves, would like him to have that, just like they want to be able to put him on the cover of a comic book and have that appeal to people of a wide variety of interests, not just people who enjoy very traditional, conservative, old-school DC comics. And running around in wrestling togs or Edgar Rice Burroughs gear, however you want to look at it, there's only so many people that are going to embrace that. And let's face it, as far as big green guys who run around half-naked go, he's always going to come up second to the Hulk. So we should probably try to figure out a way of making him more unique. But arguably, one of the ways to make him more unique from the Hulk is to make him less unique from the other types of characters that Alex Ross said that he liked, Red Tornado, The Vision. His current New 52 costume, I think, looks really great. There are aspects of the old costume I miss very much, and there are aspects of the new costume I'm not totally wild about. And because so much of his skin is now covered, and because he has such an ornate uniform, he does ultimately look a lot more like the Vision, especially, with whom he has a number of powers in costume and somewhat of a disposition. But I think his core personality is much different. I think he's a much warmer and more approachable character. I think he's a more complex character. I think visually he is obviously much different looking from the Vision, even though they have characteristics in common. The color schemes are very different. And unlike most of the characters of the New 52, I think that the Manhunter was improved visually by the reboot. I especially like that they took his little pie symbol. It's a very simple logo. It's a cross with an X through it. So you essentially are cutting a circle into, 10 slices? A child can draw it. The general public wouldn't necessarily associate that directly with the Manhunter. But one tweak that they made in the New 52 is it's now gray with red stripes, which I think looks fantastic. It pops in a way that the simple black and white never did. did. And nobody else in the world, I think, is going to think of using that for anything. Why would you? And hell, if you flipped it into red pie slices with gray stripes, you could say they were hemispheres of Mars or something. This symbol means whatever you want it to mean, but I do think it's a solid enough icon for a character that is probably never going to be an A-lister. As far as the Spectre reference goes, that kit's being kind of a touchy place because the Spectre creative team looking for a new project move over to Martian Manhunter, to some degree we're writing a lighter version of their Spectre book. For me, you look at the Silver Age of comics, the Spectre wasn't as associated with the JSA as he became. Whenever they would have one of those JSA, JLA team-ups, it usually involved Dr. Fate. And Dr. Fate was the guy who didn't have an Earth 1 parallel. Manhunter was the guy who didn't have an Earth 2 parallel. They both had somewhat similar interpretations in that time period. If you go back and you look at the classic Dr. Fate stories, he's a much more cavalier sort, dropping puns and punching people and that sort of thing. But he became much more aloof and cooler in the Silver Age, and especially in the Bronze Age and from there on. So I tend to associate those two characters more. But of course, John Jones is much warmer. And you do have these interesting contrasts where Fate is a character based in magic and John Jones is an alien based to some degree in science fiction or science fantasy. I think both characters have strong visuals, strong hooks, but it seems like people tend not to look for those hooks. They tend to assign them roles based on who they've been in team books, where I think Dr. Fate could be much stronger as a soloist if you work with the concept of he's basically King Arthur combined with Merlin. He's a knight of magic. And then Martian Manhunter is an alien cop, which was much more common in the Silver Age. You could apply that same role to Green Lantern, to Hawkman. But he's much more of a cop than they are. He's a special investigator. He's a guy who's going to do deep dives. He's going to deal with darker, heavier cases than they are. Hawkman is always going to be diverted by the archaeological aspect of his character. He's always digging into ruins. He's always digging into past lives. A lot of the dynamic is going to come from his relationship with Hawkwoman. And in fact, in many ways, they are much more of a science fantasy concept than the Manhunter is, because they're always going to have to go off into space and fight in battles and deal with the big space opera aspects. The same goes for Green Lantern. While there are elements of him that are like a cop, he's really more of a knight himself. He's just a science fiction knight versus Dr. Fate's magical knight. He's always going to be off on a crusade. He's always going to be working with groups of other people. Where in the case of Manhunter, he's pretty much always solo. He's the one who actually will do the more in-depth detective work. And he's not the guy who's necessarily going to push back an alien invasion. He's the guy who's going to find that one alien who's come to Earth and is sucking out spinal fluid or impregnating people with baby aliens that are going to burst out of their chest or whatever. His scale is going to be a little bit smaller, even though he's very powerful, but he actually treats aliens more personal. He's more of a one-on-one kind of guy, or maybe a five-on-one kind of guy, but he's not the guy you send to fight armies of alien adversaries. He's an extraordinary cop going up against extraordinary crooks. Maybe it's an individual, maybe it's a gang, but it's more personal. It's on a more human level. I think that's the way you have to show Manhunter's humanity to some degree, is because he's supposed to work on that level. He's going to deal with humanity, and he's going to deal with aliens who have their own problems, their own issues, their own hang-ups, and he's got to interact with that as well. You just have to spice it up with the science fantasy aspects. I don't think Martian Manhunter is an icon in the way that the other six members of the Magnificent Seven are. I think you have to explain to people who the Manhunter is through his personality, by how he relates to other people. I think that the Supergirl TV show has done a great job with that, because it's not about him being a 7-foot green guy. It's about how he relates to Kara and to Alex and to the other people he works with the DEO. The show doesn't have the budget to have John Jones running around. He's playing a normal man in a government agency, navigating the inherent conflict of being an alien who hunts other aliens. Most people on most TV shows don't have iconography to sell you. They're selling you a personality. They're selling you a performance. And unlike most superheroes, I think that's how you have to sell the Manhunter. John Jones is a personality. He's a set of beliefs. He's ethics. He's how he relates to other aliens, how he relates to humanity. He's not a bat symbol. He's not a Superman shield. You have to dig deeper with the sleuth from outer space.
When you showed Martian Manhunter, it showed appreciation for the Silver Age beginnings, because he was there for the first many issues. And then when he leaves, it's more of the 70s era, because he's ultimately replaced. Then there's the impression of the world made from the cartoon Super Friends. But even when they expanded it later and added other members to the Justice League, they left out the Martian Manhunter. So in my mind, he was just removed from the general public, so they couldn't fully appreciate and understand and impart some confusion about his definition, and that there's so much more overlapping with what you already have in Superman. That's why, of course, you wouldn't necessarily put him into the cartoon. The main reason they had Aquaman in the show was that he was somebody who did something fundamentally different than the other guys. In a lot of the illustrations I did for the Justice League, the Martian Manhunter was someone I almost discounted until I fully realized how important he was to the formative unit of the Justice League. While I always felt like whatever I was doing with the character, at least I could be consistent with what I understood. If you look at any of this stuff I did, not counting Kingdom Come, but the Justice League one-shot and the Justice series that I did, you will never see Wonder Woman flying, because in my world she should never have done the exact same thing as Superman. There shouldn't be that overlapping power, and by the same token, Martian Manhunter would never have heat vision.
That would go far in explaining how you focused more on the telepathic abilities and the shape-shifting.
Right, and during the Grant Morrison run they were really exploring those sorts of things, whereas the guys in the 60s didn't understand all the ramifications of what he could do. In the 70s, when he was no longer part of the Justice League, and then in the tumult of the 80s, there was much more effort put into the capabilities of the character. You could get more of an idea of how different an alien he could be.
We're getting a little bit fanboy here, because just for instance, there isn't a single power that Luke Cage has that She-Hulk doesn't have. So is that a criteria to decline usage of the Luke Cage character in, say, a teen book or something? You look at the Green Lantern Corps. Every single member of the Corps has the same power ring with the same basic attributes. So the individual members of the Corps aren't defined by their power ring. They're defined by their personalities, their individual accomplishments and failures, that sort of thing. I don't think that you can determine what characters to feature on a super team based on the bylaws of the Legion of Superheroes. That said, the Martian Manhunter comes with a toy box. And if you choose to play with certain of those toys and leave your other ones in the bin, that's a perfectly valid creative choice. Heat vision, laser vision, Martian vision, whatever you want to call it. If you don't want to use that because it looks too much like something Superman would do, I don't think it's an essential power of the character. I'm not going to miss it overly much. He does look cool when he has energy beams shooting out of his eyes with that big brow of his. Especially if they're like a red tinge and then he's got the green skin, so you got a nice little contrast there. But again, personal preference. Now, as far as Martian Manhunter being left out of the Super Friends goes, I get that and I'm cool with it. Because here's the thing, the Super Friends were not the Justice League. The core of the Super Friends was Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Aquaman, and Robin. Robin and in the Justice League. They all met at the Hall of Justice. That's a place that didn't exist in the comic books. They sometimes fought villains that weren't in the comics. They often fought villains that weren't associated with the Justice League. Later on, when they expanded their membership, a large percentage of the motivation for that was to introduce minority superheroes at a time when the environment was much more culturally progressive. Looking at a team of all white superheroes was more problematic then. It's not that you wouldn't get pilloried in social media if you didn't have characters of color today, but if you look at the Justice League cartoon that was put out in the early 2000s, they had one member of color. He was highly visible, he was well represented, and that was enough. Where at the time of Super Friends, they couldn't just have one person from one race. They tried to represent a whole rainbow of different races all at once through Apache Chief, Samurai, Black Falcon, El Dorado, who I hasten to add had an awful lot of powers in common with the Martian Manhunter. Even more so if you factor in the Martian Manhunter alternate identity slash associate Bloodwind. Bloodwind's power set was almost identical to El Dorado's. And see, in that time period, the Martian Manhunter was a green-skinned Caucasian. When he was in human form, he was just plain Caucasian. And of course, he was also a Martian, which isn't a minority group that needed to be represented in a cartoon. But setting all that aside, the reason why I'm most cool with the Martian Manhunter not being on the team is because I like John Jones not necessarily being a deep cut, but I don't want him to be the kind of song that gets played on commercial after commercial. The Super Friends are kind of like the Beatles, and everybody loves the Beatles, but you don't get any points for liking Help or Hey Jude or Here Comes the Sun, because everybody likes those songs. And yeah, I'm pretty sure they've all popped up in a commercial at some point, or a movie trailer, or something that everybody has seen. That's who the big DC icons are supposed to be. The Martian Manhunter is more like a Velvet Underground hit. It's still a hit. Everybody's heard Lou Reed's Walk on the Wild Side. But if it pops up in a commercial, you're going to have some cognitive dissonance because you're like, wait, do you guys not know what that song is about? It's not that the Velvet Underground aren't well regarded. They're well respected. They have a catalog of hits that got at least some airplay. Musicians, of course, love them. Not very many people heard the Velvet Underground's albums, but everyone who did went out and started their own band. I like that version of Martian Manhunter. I like the Manhunter that's a supporting player in the Supergirl show. I like the Manhunter that was in the Justice League cartoon, but wasn't necessarily the biggest member of it. Someone that everybody knew was really powerful, that everybody respected, that has a smaller but devoted fan base. There's a homogeneity that comes with being one of those big icons. icons. You take a character like Wonder Woman, part of what's hurt her in terms of her publishing history, in terms of her inability to be the star of a work that has the resonance of a Dark Knight Returns or a Year One or whatever happened to the Man of Steel, is that she can't just be a superhero. She has to represent so many things to so many different people as the most high-profile superheroine in the history of American comic books. And that's a freaking drag. The Martian Manhunter has things that he represents as well, but because he's a bit of an oddball and an outsider, there's an expectation that he's not necessarily going to play to expectations. I like that guys like David Goyer have dismissed the Martian Manhunter out of hand because his name is stupid. Because that means he won't be in their awful freaking movies that I don't want to see. As it currently stands, I'm looking at seeing the Wonder Woman movie early next year, and if that sucks, I might be off the bandwagon. I might not bother with any of those other movies. If they can't get Wonder Woman right, why do I care if they do Superman, Batman, Flash, Aquaman? Those are much higher profile characters. They always have been. And every dollar that I spend watching the DCEU right now is a vote in favor of them continuing to do the type of movies they've done. Those haven't been very good movies. Those aren't the kind of movies I want to see or support. That's not the way I see the DC characters. And God, I wouldn't want to see what these guys would do with the Martian Manhunter. So I would hate to see the character become a victim of success. I like him to be a smaller scale in terms of his visibility. I know he's enormously powerful. I know he has enormous potential, and I would like to see that potential better realized in stories, but I'd rather those stories be constructed and presented by people who have the good taste to recognize how awesome he is as a character without having it blared from the loudspeakers the way that they try to do with, say, the characters in the Suicide Squad. I've liked the Suicide Squad since John Ostrander first started writing them. I'm peeved at a choice that they made very recently in a Suicide Squad comic that took a longtime player off the board, coincidentally written by a guy who wrote a Martian Manhunter series that I hate so much that I stopped talking about it on this podcast. So you Suicide Squad fans, maybe you can feel a little bit of my pain now, huh? But regardless, Martian Manhunter can be the fans in a way that Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman can't be, because they belong to the greater world. They belong to the Mundies, the normal people, the straights. I don't want Martian Manhunter to be your super friend. I don't care if his action figures are peg warmers. I'd rather have one good one than the endless variations we were seeing in the late 90s and early 2000s anyway. I didn't buy all those blasted things. I'm not that kind of fan. I'm not some crazy OCD case that has to line his walls with tons of Martian Manhunter stuff to prove how big of a fan I am. Leave that to the mainstream characters. There's a different kind of cool to being the superhero that is given to all people, to people of all ages, that belong to the children especially. And that's awesome too, but I like the kind of cool that we've already got with the Martian Manhunter. I like the idea that he can still be in books that are revolutionary, books that push boundaries, so long as, again, the character that we love is represented in the comics as opposed to what some other people have done in recent memory with the character. And besides, if you go back and you look at the Super Friends Treasury edition from the 70s, you've got Alex Toth drawing Martian Manhunter, making a reference to him in this one little story, this one Japanese-only B-side type of comic book appearance. It's reprinted in the Super Friends trade paperback, by the way. That's cool. That's perfect. That's what I want for my Martian Manhunter. I want him to be that guy that you kind of have to be in a little bit of a club to even know about, you know? Let the kids have Flash and Aquaman and Green Lantern. You get a little older, you get a little wiser, you get a little bit more hip, then you can come be a Martian Manhunter fan. That's the way I like it. And a little further past me, there's some guys who are into the Doom Patrol that are like, yeah, yeah. You know, once you get over the Martian Manhunter thing, you can come read our guys. So there's a pecking order of cool. We got to know our place.
Do you think that the fact that he didn't have a standout foe diminished his potential?
That's correct. Other than a whole planet of white Martians. But there was never much done with that. That was something that was only teased out in the 70s, and then they would build upon that in the 80s. And then in the 90s, it seemed like such a pivotal part of his past.
I'm going to have to stop you right there. Okay, for starters, the white Martians were teased in 1969, and one more time in 1977. And then they weren't mentioned again until 1997, arguably 1996, depending on when you want to lay credit to the Hyper Clan or to a very brief mention in JLA A Midsummer's Nightmare. What happened is the white Martians were responsible for the destruction of Mars, specifically Commander Blanks, who right off the bat, something of a standout villain, but he appeared to die at the end of his first story, so I could see where you'd have to move past that. Then in the 70s and 80s, there were no mention of white Martians. What happened is that John Jones was typically having to fight against militant elements of his own green Martian people. on their new surrogate world. So he did have villains. They were just other green Martians, not white. But in truth, none of them really stand out either. As of 1988, the status quo became there were no other Martians besides John Jones. And so that particular avenue was closed off. But what you see, if you look at John Jones's return appearances to the Justice League, those sporadic dates he would hit when he hadn't been around for a while, is that as a representative of the earliest days of the Justice League, as Alex Ross cites, he often brought with him one of the earliest villains of the Justice League, Despero, star of the very first issue of their book. John Jones fought Despero twice in the Silver Age, but it was as a member of the Justice League, there was no distinct individual animosity between the two characters. But that began to change in the early 80s when Despero threatened the Martian people and captured John Jones and forced him to play a chess game in which John Jones actually represented the opposing team against the Justice League. So in order for John Jones to win the game and save the Martians, he had to sacrifice the members of the Justice League. There's actually a very nice Jim Starlin cover for the second half of that story, and it was definitely a callback to that original Justice League of America number one story, and it's very iconic cover. Then just a few years later, Despero returned to Earth in his more popularly accepted form, where his fin became something of a mohawk and he became a much more hulking, brutish character. He fought the Detroit-era Justice League, of which John Jones at that time was a member. Again, not direct individual animosity between those two characters, but it was the circumstance in which the only other iconic member of the Justice League there was a member at that time was Batman, who left almost immediately. Then Despero returns in the early 90s in a very well-regarded story arc. It was one of the few dark, serious stories done during the international funny period, and in that story, it very clearly was shown that there was personal animosity between the Martian Manhunter and Despero, especially because Despero was specifically targeting former members of the Detroit-era Justice League. That particular episode was pivotal for the character of John Jones, because that's when he essentially adopted Gypsy as his daughter surrogate character. Gypsy, having lost her parents, being orphaned, worked closely with John Jones repeatedly over those years, in particular in the Justice League Task Force book, in which a team was formed that included Despero, but a version of Despero that it had his mind taken over by the robot Elrond, which had happened in a story where Despero had returned to Earth again, fought the Justice League again, specifically fought the Martian Manhunter, since that was his touchstone character in that group. There were no other classic members of the Justice League present. And then during Despero's time of slavery, in which he was struggling to reassert himself throughout, and in which Elrond was at one point put on trial for the crimes committed by Despero, with John Jones and his charges serving as a defense of him, there's a very clear connection between those two characters. In more recent times, in one of the last major arcs in the JLA series that had been launched by Morrison and Porter, Jeff Johns and Alan Heinberg wrote a story in which, once again, Despero returned and was specifically going after, in that case, Martian Manhunter and Aquaman. And then even more recently, you had a story arc where Despero returned to the New 52 and fought Martian Manhunter on two occasions in that time period, once in the Jeff Johns written Justice League and again in the Justice League of America book that spun out of it. So if you see Despero as a standout villain, I'm sure most people do at this point. He's one of the more notable general DCU villains. And despite spreading his hate around throughout the DC universe, if there's one character he comes back to over and over again, it is the Martian Manhunter. So in that respect, I would argue that at the very least, Manhunter could claim Despero as a standout foe. There are others. Cases that could be made more stronger and more passionately by people other than me. There's also lesser known characters that I would root for, but I think I could do a whole podcast just discussing the various foes of the Martian Manhunter. The fact of the matter is I have done whole podcasts about it, and we'll do more in the future. But if you're looking for one guy that you could pit against Martian Manhunter mano a mano, and most people would be perfectly fine with it, you got Despero. But in speaking about the White Martians, I'd also like to point out that I don't understand why we haven't seen the Hyperclan more often. I thought that they were of interestingly designed group of characters. The only time they were really seriously revisited was during Mark Waid's Terror Incognita arc, something like 15 years ago. But I do think that the Hyper Clan, who helped launch the JLA franchise again in the late 90s and then returned later in it, typically had a particular axe to grind with the Martian Manhunter, and I do think that that could have been better exploited in Martian Manhunter series, in his stories. I like that team, and I don't understand why they haven't popped up more often, and they certainly had a high visibility at their debut.
What used to bother me was when people would take the character and be completely indifferent to what had happened in the past with him. I would even have to correct this with Paul Dini. He would write that he was a soul survivor. He's not a soul survivor. When he came here from Mars, it might have been a desolate planet, but there were other Martians. He was stranded in the first established adventures, and eventually he would get reunited with his fellow Martians, and they certainly didn't notice any kind of reboot that completely wiped out the Martian race. I was heavily strongly influenced by the Eduardo Barreto / Gerard Jones series. To my mind, it's one of the best works ever done with the character. That really grounds what I thought of the character more than anything else.
Preach on, Brother Alex. Love pretty much everything you said. Big fan of the American Secrets miniseries. I will point out that the 1988 Martian Manhunter miniseries did make it seem as though all the Martians besides John Jones had died under Hronmir's plague, and that the various visions of Mars that John Jones had seen after that point were delusions planted in his mind by Saul Ordell. That retcon, I think, was very problematic. It tries to invalidate not just the stories that were told about John Jones before his arrival to Earth as far as a living Mars goes, but it also tried to retroactively invalidate a bunch of the stories from the Silver Age, not to mention a bunch of Justice League stories, since these guys had fought Martians on numerous occasions. It was a reboot that was respected, and continues to be respected, actually, because when it was re-rebooted after Zero Hour in 1998, a lot of the elements of the story were kept by the writer John Ostrander, but Grant Morrison had already opened a door, leaving the path open for other Martians to exist. The white Martians continued to exist until Joe Kelly killed them off completely randomly. Wasn't a fan of that development either. Wasn't a fan of that story. But even setting that aside, you established that Malefic was around, at least for a time. It made it seem as though you could have had other Martians around. It certainly would make sense if you were going to bring back any of the old continuity from the 60s, 70s, 80s, which prior to the New 52, it seemed like more and more of that older continuity was being re-examined and validated. And of course, they all checked it out for the New 52, which is one of the reasons why that whole thing sits so poorly with me, because I thought that DC was trying to get to a better place, and then it went to a much worse place, being early 90s Marvel. But yeah, Martian Manhunter shouldn't be a sole survivor, I don't think. I do think that his loved ones should pretty much be dead, certainly his wife and child or children, depending on what continuity you subscribe to. That strong element of personal tragedy and of near complete genocide, which has been in place for the character since 1969, it's just there's a world of difference between nigh complete genocide and complete genocide. It doesn't seem like there's a place in the modern comics landscape to tell stories of the sort of nuclear area existence of the Martians that we saw in the 50s and 60s. That bright, shiny optimism doesn't really work. Plus, it's just much harder for people to rationalize Martian civilizations. I think that so many people are so ignorant about science that it'd be very easy to just say there are Martians living under the surface that we just hadn't found yet. But the problem with that is there are actual human beings who still think that the Earth is flat and try to push that worldview on the internet. I'm not sure if we want to throw any fuel on that particular anti-science fire. Point being, there should definitely be other Martian survivors. They should definitely have an opportunity to interact with the Martian Manhunter. I just don't think that we want to make that the major priority with the character, because so many creators have attempted to tell stories about the Martians in recent years, and most of those stories have been freaking awful. And I'd rather read something else right now. It's not that I don't personally want to see some of that mythology explored. I just, frankly, I don't trust anybody else to deal with it. If somebody were to suddenly pop up with Ray Zeta and Norcott and Beljuz, then I'd have something to work with. But if it's going to be more like this Rob Williams maxi series, whatever you want to call that thing, I don't need it. Do not want. Hard pass. Moving right along. But let's pull back from the sour grapes. Toward the end of the conversation, Brian Stroud confesses that he'd gotten out of comics and that a friend giving him a copy of Kingdom Come had brought him back in. Alex Ross drew parallels between Kingdom Come and Darwin Cook's The New Frontier. In particular, he notes for the stuff where he used Manhunter in that, it feels very much like a kindred project because the story is entirely set in the 50s, and so what he's dealing with his own way of living in this society is very true to the roots of the character. I like that line. He also confesses that in Marvel's use of the character The Vision and in his own use of Martian Manhunter in various projects, where he normally will cast one of his friends to be his model for various superhero characters, in both those instances, Alex Ross cast himself, probably in part because they're bald. But I just enjoyed that Ross felt this kinship with New Frontier and with the Martian Manhunter. We're all fans. We all see value in this character, and I'm just happy to see people having this conversation, and I hope that nobody minds that I felt the need to insert myself into it.
Your ego betrays you. Will you not listen to reason? This won't end well for you.
The maniacs from Mars across the robot brain of social media include The First Bat, Alan Middleton, Ange, Between the Pages, Cash Flag, Charlie Niemeyer, Chris Sheehan, Coffee and Comics Blog, Comic Reflections, Darren and Ruth Sutherland, David Golding, DC in the 1980s, DCU Movie Page, Dr. G Nerdologist, Ed Moore and Ed Moore Jr., Firestorm Fan, FKA Jason, Hicks, It's Plastic Man, Jeffrey Brown, Joseph Crawford, Carl Disley, Keith G. Baker, Cord Industries, Lukester Gold, Martin Gray, Michael Dabb, Not Gordon, Guano Man, Odell Abner Dracula, Oscar Blue Devil, Panel by Panel, Page by Page, Richard Field, Ryan C. at Trash Film Guru, Ryan Daly, Scott Bachman, The Silver and Gold Podcast, Son of Cthulhu, who wrote, I believe, a last episode, Bringer of War, John Jones Never Sounded So Good, Storm Chaser 2162, Superman Captain Marvel, Synod Alias Scarecrow, Trekker Talk Podcast, Waiting for Doom Podcast, and the Warlord Worlds Podcast. And just tweeted a number of images that I kept meaning to put onto podcast posts and didn't. They included shots from Martian Manhunter's Adventure Comics 3-issue backup feature run. I bought those issues years before I called myself a Martian Manhunter fan. I was collecting Aquaman books ahead of Peter David taking over that title, and those were among the comics that made me an Aquaman fan. The art on the Manhunter strip was, of course, by Mike Nasser, now better known as Michael Netzer, who, if you look on the blog, you can see his artwork as our header. He gave me that for free, just out of the kindness of his heart, and God bless him for that. It's gorgeous. But at the time, he was drawing this strip in the 1970s. Ange noted that the art kind of looked like a mix of Marshall Rogers and early Walt Simonson, which I agree with. I also think that it goes without saying that Neil Adams and Mike Grell are very similar looking from that time period. It's a great looking strip. I need to cover it on the podcast someday. Ange also tweeted out a page from JLA Year One where the Manhunter becomes Elmer Fudd. That was cute. And he asked thumbs up or thumbs down for the Supergirl TV show featuring John Jones eat Chacos with their own logo and everything. I thought that was fantastic. I was very happy about that. I'm going to catch up on some older mail because I've largely passed on doing any mail in recent installments. Plus, I was sitting on mail for Martian Manhunter number 6 because I expected to eventually go back and do 7, 8, and so on through the 12th and final issue. But I haven't quite been able to push myself to do that. And in fact, I listened to a podcast that discussed the final issue of the series in glowing terms, describing things that I found completely loathsome and just made me angry all over again. So no idea when I'm going to get back to covering that book. So might as well get through the mail. Trekker Talk wrote of episode 21, running errands and catching up on the latest episode of the Idlehead of Diabolu. Son of Cthulhu wrote, the new Martian Manhunter seems a bit schizo. Check out iHod Podcast for complete details. Dr. G. Nerdola just wrote, listen to the episode now. Great fun and inspiration. Off to make some digital art in response. Ange tweeted of the series' cancellation, I don't think Mr. Biscuits will be reborn in Rebirth. I don't even think I can say he had a good run. Yeah, and actually Mr. Biscuits is yet another reason why I don't want to cover those comics because I can't get it up to do the voice for Mr. Biscuits. Too much anger. Just can't be mirthful. Patrick Zercher had a Twitter conversation going asking writers, who do you feel are the most difficult characters to write? Unfortunately, I failed to put a response in, but if I recall correctly, Gail Simone had pointed out that she had difficulty writing John Jones at first, who I believe she covered during her run on Action Comics with John Byrne art and Heavy Nelson inks. But she said that once she got working on the character, she fell in love with him. I'd like to see what she would do with the character, but she hasn't had very many opportunities to work with him, unfortunately. Nerdfic Strangers asked, if the third season of Young Justice goes to Mars, what aspects of the DC Martian culture do you want to see approached? Highly recommend it. Mars has 3 races, green, white, and red. Thus far, there have only been 3.5 Martians on the show, but they've teased Mars for 2 seasons. I have a feeling they'll make Miss Martian Malefic's daughter. Honestly, I've seen like a couple or 3 episodes of Young Justice. It looked like a really good show. I haven't invested in it. I've actually been meaning to do that specifically for this podcast, especially once it came to Netflix. I definitely would like to read up more on Miss Martian ahead of her debuting in the Supergirl TV show in the second season. I've read a fair bit more Miss Martian comic books than I've seen her in animation. I'm not sure how well the character is represented in between the 2 mediums, and now she's adding a third. But clearly, she's a very popular character. She's an important part of Martian Manhunter's periphery, and I suspect after the Young Justice and Supergirl shows, she'll become very much more important to the Martian Manhunter mythos. So I need to really dedicate some time to that character that I haven't as of yet. So I really am not in a position to comment very deeply on this subject. I'm not sure how appropriate this is, but Martin Gray made a point of mentioning that he enjoyed listening to Carlo Alberi's segment on the Martian Manhunter 60th Anniversary Special Part 2, saying he sounded like Speedy Gonzalez, very likable. Direct all critical mail to Scotland. Thank you. Ange tweeted, please watch tonight Supergirl Best John Ever. I can't recall if that was the episode with the Chacos I mentioned earlier or the one with his origin sequence. All I know is that I've been very happy with how Martian Manhunter has been represented on the show, and I'm hopeful that he'll continue to be a highlight of that series going into the second season. Trekker Talk took the plunge on some polls I was doing when I was doing the 60 years of Martian Manhunter year-by-year summaries, which I wanted to do more of, but I just did not appreciate how time-consuming they would be, and I just didn't do a good job of regulating what I covered. I was going to do little quick synopses of those stories. Ended up doing fairly full-blown ones, often with voice acting and everything. I don't know if I would call it acting, but other people might. It's more like the silly voices you'd put on if you were reading a book to a kid as a bedtime story or something. But anyway, Trekker Talk wrote, hopefully at least 3 three now, done and done, just rank them all. It was a real struggle. When you're trying to do a whole year's worth of stories and figure out what order they go in, it's really tricky. I really appreciate Darren and Ruth putting that effort into it. And there's actually a few other people that contributed after I kind of nagged and browbeat a little bit. I will be covering results of that, likely whenever I get around to doing 60 years of Martian Manhunter. I think it was 1958 was going to be the next year. I do think it's going to happen. As a matter of fact, I'm confident it's going to happen because I'm not going to stop doing Martian Manhunter stuff probably ever, but there may be hiatuses and it may take a little while for me to get to it. I didn't get through it in the 60th anniversary year, but hey, if I could get two of those done every year from now on, I'll have wrapped up the entire original solo series inside of half a decade. So not too bad, right? This is how I know that it was Darren and Ruth, because Warlord Worlds then tweeted, "Can't have only half of the Trekker Talk World Worlds duo rank these, so I've added mine based on Frank's fun reviews. Thank you." I don't know which of the two we're talking, but I appreciate both your efforts. And you're both sweethearts. Thank you. Ange tweeted generally on the Martian Manhunter series that was recently canceled, "Don't know if I would like a wild book like this starring Supergirl. And her New 52 book was canned at 23,000 sales," referring to how Manhunter sales was actually still pretty decent when they ended the book, arbitrarily because they were doing the Rebirth launch. But Ange really doesn't have room to complain anymore because Supergirl was one of the top 10 books released as part of the Rebirth initiative. DC Comics is really just lathering in the girl power right now, because between Harley Quinn and Supergirl, they dominated the top 10 sales on one of the best sales months in the last 20 years. DC would have a lot to crow about, except for the fact that they doubled their publishing line of only their most popular titles. So of course, there's going to be a boom in their sales, but how sustainable is that? I don't know. It kind of depends on how good the books are, right? But I'm pretty sure if Marvel next year decides to double ship all their most popular books, we'll see another great big balloon. And I've seen it happen enough times. Then the enormous bust, like a freaking Sith. And then there's just pus and blood everywhere, and it all gets infected and the entire industry dies. But hey, let's party right now. Rome's burning. Smell the flesh in the air. It's like pork. Moving on. Randy Caldwell tweeted of a comment I made on episode 24. "The J Jackass." Alias Saul Bishop commented on the big crossover of JLA Year One that I and a whole bunch of other podcasters were involved with, that it was a great series, and that Flash Green Lantern World's Finest Mini by the same team is pretty nifty too. Speaking of that event, the Waiting for Doom podcast contributed to it, and one of its hosts is Paul Hicks, who wrote great interviews, Frank. I believe referring to my talks with Mark Verheiden. I hope I got that right. And John Ostrander. Thank you, sir. Will in Chicago wrote of the new TV show. Well, not so new anymore. It's going into the second season. "I like Supergirl and how they handled John Jones. John comes across as a veteran warrior who is fighting for a world that he knows will never truly be his own. There's a report out that Willem Dafoe will be an as yet unnamed hero in Justice League. It turned out he's going to be playing Vulko from Aquaman's supporting cast. But Will asks, I think that he would have the acting chops to portray the Martian Manhunter. I think Willem Dafoe would be an interesting choice for the role, especially one that focuses on his adventure in the Silver Age, or, you know, like a 50 set story, because that would be more difficult to pull off with an African-American actor. But the thing of it is, and I've championed this almost as long as I've been a Martian Manhunter fan, I like African-American actors, or in the case of David Harewood, English, African, African-English, African-British, I don't know, actors of color playing John Jones. I like for that to be their role. You can still lay claim to having an original founder of the Justice League representing for your people without it being a big retcon if you just have John Jones be an African-American. I don't think this is especially new. When I was talking with Adam Benson, who was a Martian Manhunter fan decades before I ever was, he cast Woody Strode as his fan cast for the role if it had been made in the 1960s. And I actually decided, well, if it was good enough for him, it's good enough for me. So when I did a series of little fan fiction posts pretending like there was a Martian Manhunter movie put out in the 60s, I went ahead and cast Woody Strode as well. But yeah, if you're going to have a modern actor of Caucasian descent, whatever you want to call it, play the role, then Willem Dafoe would be all right. He would definitely have that slightly tweaked quality, maybe a bit of an alienness about him. I'm a fan of Willem Dafoe. I don't think he'd be like my first choice, but I wouldn't be renting my garments over the choice feet if it had come that way. I just think that in a modern context, you really need to have that diversity. I think that John Jones presents a unique opportunity for one of the old school heroes to do a race swap, if you will. And I just would want to see them take advantage of that as opposed to casting a white actor. Luke Dobb wrote, "Oh, I've missed a bunch of the Idlehead of Diablo podcasts. Perfect. I know what I'm listening to today. Can I get a whole album of Frank covering Prince, please? No. What do I have to do to make this happen? I will pay money." Thanks to owe him money to Patreon for that print he did of Martian Manhunter that I tweeted out. It was also featured on the blog. Martin Gray wrote, "If Zoop comes to tea," I don't recall any context for that, but it sounded cute, so I repeated it. Of the last episode where I went after Comic Versus going after John Jones, King Size Comics Giant Size Fun Podcast wrote, "Get him, Frank. Great episode and a neat format change. I'm looking forward to more done in this style. This is kind of that." Waiting for Doom's Paul Hicks wrote again, "I want to do a podcast episode on Martian Manhunter's primary characterization as a womanizer, so Frank will do a rebuttal episode. That'd be an excuse to talk about the ladies in Martian Manhunter's life, most of which only started popping up in the last 15 years or so." Odell Abner Dracula writes, "New 52 Zook only drinks Red Bull." And there's a context for that, like on the tip of my brain, but I can't quite make the connection. But again, tea, Red Bull, it's all good. I just like talking about Zook. Finally, Unearthly Visions wrote, "Listening to the New 52 episode of Idlehead, good stuff. I hope so. I completely forgot that I'd done a New 52 podcast episode. And in fact, I'd been thinking about doing another one without realizing that I'd already done one. So I need to go back and listen to figure out what I did the first time so I don't repeat myself a second time." Anyhow, he continues, "I think an interesting take on an MM solo book would be to give it kind of a noir detective feel, play up the shape-shifting and invisibility, and having him work metahuman mystery cases. Maybe somewhere like Opal City. They really should give him more love. Maybe get Morrison back on the character or something. I have advocated for Morrison writing a Manhunter solo series for many years now. It's not without reservations, but I would still be welcoming to him, fingers crossed, because he can be a genius sometimes, and then sometimes he just frustrates the hell out of me. As far as your take, it's not actually unheard of. It's been done a number of times in Manhunter stories. One of the finest vintages of Martian Manhunter solo stories that gets referenced often here and elsewhere is American Secrets, which falls in that category. Also, the first JLA annual and the first Martian Manhunter annual featured stories along the lines of what you speak. I really like Opal City 2. I would like to see other characters play in there since the Jack Knight Starman no longer seems to be involved in that area. But John Jones has a beat and it's called Middletown." Podcast listeners should feel free to leave a comment on one of our blogs, either the Umbrella Rolled Spine Podcasts or the specific Idlehead of Diablo blog. Both are available quite easily through Google searches. You can also shoot me a tweet at Commander Blanks. That's BLANX. Thank you for listening.
How can you just leave me standing alone in a world that's so cold? Maybe I'm just too demanding. Maybe I'm just like my father, too bold. Maybe I'm just like my mother. She's never satisfied. Why do we scream at each other? This is what it sounds like when the doves cry.